This is full-time Catholic radio for Southeast Michigan, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
And a good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. There is an agenda on the part of mainstream bioethicists to sanitize medical decision-making of all religious influence. I don't think I'm overstating that. And Catholic medical practice is seen as the great impediment to pulling this off. I mean, Catholic hospitals were established in order to practice medicine within the framework of Catholic faith. And these hospitals were established at great personal expense on the part of Catholics, and they had the explicit purpose of providing medical care consistent with the sanctity of life ethic of the Catholic Church. So Catholic hospitals don't sterilize patients. They don't participate in abortion. They don't assist in suicides. And similarly, some Catholic doctors outside the hospitals integrate their faith with the way that they carry out their medical practice. This, of course, is under attack right now. And we know in California, for instance, a transgender man has been allowed to sue a Catholic hospital that has refused to perform a hysterectomy on him, who was, again, in his own personal history, once a her. Evan Minton, a biological woman who identifies as a man, says the procedure was canceled when she said she's transgender. And the Catholic Church looked at that and said, we're not going to remove your uterus because there's nothing wrong with it. That would be a form of mutilation, and we don't mutilate human bodies. We're going to talk that over with Wes Smith also this hour. I share with you an interview I did earlier with Mike Aquilino about the early church and the invention of modern medicine. We'll call it the healing imperative. But first, to today's headlines.
Thanks, Hal. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Thursday, September 26th. It's the Feast of Saints Cosmas and Damian. Today's news is brought to you by the Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. Acting Director of National Intelligence Joseph McGuire is insisting that he followed the law in handling an explosive whistleblower complaint.
I want to stress that I believe that the whistleblower and the Inspector General have acted in good faith throughout. I have every reason to believe that they have done everything by the book and followed the law.
Testifying in a House hearing, McGuire said he followed proper procedures in delaying submission of an Inspector General's report to Congress, which is required by law. The Inspector General report focused on the whistleblower complaint, which McGuire called unique and unprecedented. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, though, is claiming McGuire broke the law by withholding the whistleblower complaint from Congress.
I think what the DNI did was broke the law. The law is very clear. The DNI shall convey the complaint.
The whistleblower complaint involved President Trump's July phone call with the President of Ukraine. The Senate is confirming a former corporate attorney to be the nation's next labor secretary. Eugene Scalia was confirmed on a vote of 53 to 44. Democrats accused the son of the late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia of being anti-worker. He replaces Alex Acosta, who resigned in July under the pressure for his role in the Jeffrey Epstein case. And Iran has slammed the door to the possibility of talks with the U.S. Here's correspondent Bill Zimfer with more.
As world leaders were working behind the scenes this week to bring U.S. and Iranian officials together during the U.N. General Assembly, Iran ended that possibility, with Iran's President Hassan Rouhani saying in a speech at the U.N. that there could be no talks on Iran's nuclear program until there is sanction relief. Rouhani called U.S. sanctions on his country economic terrorism.
I'm Steve Clark, Ave Maria Radio News.
And a good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. Catholic hospitals were established with the purpose of providing medical care consistent with the sanctity of life ethic of the Catholic Church. And so Catholic hospitals, you know, according to their charters anyways, and according to the teaching of the Catholic Church, are not supposed to participate in abortions or assisted suicide or sterilizations. And there are many Catholic physicians and nurses, of course, who maintain that commitment to the Catholic faith in their practice outside of hospitals. Right now, we've got a transgender man in California who is suing a Catholic hospital that has refused to perform a hysterectomy Now, this is a biological woman who identifies as a man, and the Catholic hospital is saying, we're not going to remove your uterus because there's nothing wrong with your uterus, and that would be a form of mutilation, which we don't practice. With me right now to talk about this particular case and the broader issues involved is Wes Smith, senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, consultant to the Patients' Rights Council. He's the author of 13 books, including Culture of Death, The Age of Do-Harm Medicine. And you can find his Human Exceptionalism blog at National Review and further writings of his at First Things. Wes, good to have you back here. Thanks.
Thanks, Al, and hello to your listeners.
Let's start with this particular case. This is, do I have it right, this is a biological woman who now says she is a man and she wants her uterus removed.
Right, we're talking past tense. There's a Catholic hospital in Sacramento, California called Dignity Health, and a hysterectomy was scheduled for that hospital, and a few days before the surgery was scheduled to take place, apparently the patient called and said, well, I realize that what I'm doing here is this is part of a transition because I'm transgendered. In other words, as you pointed out, it was a biological woman who was having a hysterectomy as part of being legally recognized as a man. The hospital said, oh, I'm very sorry, we cannot do that. Our directives, which have been set out very clearly, prevent us from doing surgeries that would destroy physical function when there isn't a health reason for it. For example, the biological woman's uterus was not cancerous. If the uterus was cancerous, there's certainly nothing in the directive of the hospital that would prevent a hysterectomy. But this was a healthy uterus. And so one directive says that the hospital can't interfere with the normal, natural functioning of the body. The second one, which is, of course, familiar to all Catholics, is that sterilization goes against the Catholic moral teaching, and that cannot be done either, again, with the exception of a important health need that would have that secondary effect, but certainly not the intent. There was a great hue and cry over after 3 days. The hospital actually helped this patient find a different hospital, not a Catholic hospital, that would do the surgery, and for their effort, they got sued by this patient for discrimination based on sexual identification. The trial court kicked it out, said, look, this is freedom of religion. But the Court of Appeals, in a very disturbing case, reinstituted the case and said that even though Dignity Health's directives, these are my terms, are not in the least bit invidious, meaning they are not saying we will do a hysterectomy for a heterosexual person who does not have any of these issues, but we just won't do them for people who identify as a different sex.
Right.
There's nothing like that. The directives say we will not take any healthy organ, I'm paraphrasing, and we will not engage in actions that sterilize, again, without this important health and physical health requirement. Now, that puts Catholic health care generally in the dock.
Yeah.
Because if this case holds, then basically what the Court of Appeals of California is saying is that the right of Catholic hospitals to practice their faith in any realistic manner must be subsumed to the current gender identity, sexual orientation, abortion, whatever it might be, secular values that are now steeping bioethics. In other words, this is a direct assault on the ability of Catholic hospitals to practice Catholic health care
right,
based on Catholic moral teaching.
So what's the next step then, to force Catholic hospitals to perform abortions?
Oh, well, that's already been attempted. Certainly the ACLU has filed a lawsuit to that effect. The ACLU also filed a lawsuit against a Catholic hospital that refused, as part of a birthing process, to sterilize the patient. The goal, definitely, is to drive Catholic, Orthodox Catholic, and other religious-believing medical practitioners and institutions out of healthcare. It could eventually apply to assisted suicide. Imagine Mother Teresa's order,
right,
running a nursing home and being required to allow assisted suicide on site.
Yeah.
Well, you know what would happen. Mother Teresa's order would close down the nursing home before they permitted that. And I'm afraid that Catholic hospitals may face the same conundrum.
Right.
Do we yield to what is, in my view, an authoritarian imposition by the state that violates the free exercise of religion, or, and of course that could have impact on a community, I mean, on the ability to call themselves Catholic hospitals, or do we go out of business, or do we sell to a community nonprofit or whatever it might be.
Right.
What's really happening is you see these secular, they're really authoritarian types that want to force traditional religious, traditional pro-life views out of healthcare. They're saying, well, because Catholic hospitals will receive money from the public coffers, for example, Medicare, then they should not be allowed to practice Catholic medicine, which completely obviates the point that these hospitals were established at great expense in private philanthropy by people who specifically wanted a uniquely Catholic experience,
right,
and has served thousands and thousands and millions of patients who want to be served in a Catholic milieu. So my fear is that rather than permit Catholic hospitals to be Catholic, there are a lot of these secularists that would rather have the brain drain and even see institutions closed in order to impose their orthodoxy on the entire society.
You mentioned an article in the influential Journal of Medical Ethics, which claims that professional, authentic medical professionalism basically eliminates religion entirely from the doctor's practice, so it can play no role whatsoever in their profession. Is this becoming standard?
This is orthodoxy in mainstream bioethics. It is the attack on what is sometimes called, and I certainly call, medical conscience. That it is that in bioethics, the advocacy is, and this articles like this have been written by Ezekiel Emanuel, who is one of the world's most noted bioethicists, in the New England Journal of Medicine, which is the world's most respected medical journal, in the Journal of Medical Ethics, as you just described, and in other places, American Medical Association Journal, JAMA, Journal of the American Medical Association. And the idea is that if a medical procedure is legal and a patient wants it and it has been accepted by the medical establishment, meaning the secularist types, and a patient requests it from a doctor and the procedure has a reasonable chance of providing the outcome that the patient wants, then the doctor is precluded from saying no. The doctor must either do the deed him or herself or give what in Canada they call an effective referral, that is, procure the doctor that they know will do the deed.
Right.
So you see in Australia, Catholic doctors have actually been medically disciplined for refusing to do a sex selection abortion, a doctor, and refusing to refer for a sex selection abortion based on Victoria, Australia's law requiring an effective referral. A Canada Court of Appeals in Ontario, and these are our closest cultural cousins,
right,
has ruled that in a lawsuit brought by Catholic doctors saying we don't want to participate in euthanasia, which is now legal across Canada because of a Supreme Court ruling, the Court of Appeals said that every doctor must perform every legal and paid for by the single-payer health plan medical procedure requested by a patient, assuming the potential for efficacy that I mentioned, or do the effective referral. And that includes abortion, that includes lethal injection, homicide, euthanasia, meaning doctors required to either kill a patient or participate in the killing by procuring the person who commits the homicide. That also includes the gender dysphoria interventions, for example, potentially stopping normal puberty of a child. And so in Canada, and at least in the province of Ontario, they are really pushing Catholic doctors who brought this suit and other doctors who believe in normal Hippocratic medicine to choose between their professions and their faith. That's authoritarianism. It's not concentration camp tyranny, but it's soft authoritarianism, and it marks the destruction of freedom of religion in Canada. In fact, I'm just starting to write an article about that. And it will come here because the same attitudes are being expressed here. It just hasn't gone as far as, although this California Court of Appeals basically takes the issue of dealing with the transgender question to where the Canadian Court of Appeals did with euthanasia.
This looks as though it may become the martyrdom of Catholic medical institutions.
Yes. Yes, we're talking about social martyrdom here, and you're talking about doctors and nurses perhaps being forced out of health care. or be like you could have an oncologist who's forced to become a podiatrist just so they don't get asked for euthanasia. Well, think of the loss to a society if, let's say, a 30-year experienced oncologist leaves the field because he doesn't or she doesn't want to kill patients, either retiring before they would have or moving into an area of medicine where that request won't be made. The cancer patients who will not be treated by that doctor are the ones who are actually bearing the cost of that in terms of potentially dying if they don't get the proper care or can't get the care as readily, as well as the doctor having his or her lifetime passion and education and institutional memory stripped from the doctor and from the society and the patients the doctor would serve. It really is authoritarian.
Yeah. On the horizon, do you see any positive movement that can protect our rights in here?
Well, President Trump's administration is trying to do that.
Right.
They have, they're trying to unfold new conscious protections rules under the Health and Human Services. The screaming and howling you have heard would make you think Roe v. Wade had been overturned.
Right.
Lawsuits have been threatened because, and this isn't creating new law. It's just the Trump administration saying, we're going to enforce all of the laws on the books that protect medical conscience instead of just a few, which had been the
right.
previous practice.
Okay.
And the idea of enforcing existing law and the angry objections in the New York Times and other places shows you the contest that is that the Catholic Church faces. And voters, you know, they better think about this when they go to the polls, because if they want Catholic health care, there's going to be, I think, one group of, and I don't want to get partisan, But the Medicare for All proposals, such as from Bernie Sanders, destroy medical conscience specifically, and some other political parties support it. This is, to me, should be a major issue in the upcoming election.
I think you're right. Wes, how do people stay in touch with your work?
You can. I'm on National Review. My Twitter is @ForrestExit. I post all my articles. I'm also on Facebook. And you can go to the discoveryinstitute.org and go to the human exceptionalism field, and all of my article archives are there as well.
Very good. Wes, thanks so much for your joining us and really for all you do monitoring this. Thank you.
Thank you, Al.
Today's programming on 990 WDEO is brought to you in part by a gift made from our day sponsor, Father Gabriel Richard High School, inviting you to their open house Wednesday, October 2nd from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Learn how FGR forms intentional disciples of Christ. For more information, go to FGRH.org. That's FGRHS.org.
Ciao, Sorelli and Fratelli, sisters and brothers. Teresa Tomio here from Catholic Connection. Through the years, so many of you have contacted me asking for my advice on traveling to my favorite place in the world, Italy. Being that I've had the blessing of visiting the country more than 50 times now, I've decided to respond to those special requests by introducing Tease Italy at TravelItalyExpert.com, a website for all things Italia, where you'll receive insider tips on where to eat, stay, shop, play, and most importantly, pray. At TravelItalyExpert.com, you'll discover, with the help of our key partners, Ave Maria Radio and Corporate Travel, this beautiful Catholic country through videos, blogs, and even personal travel consulting. So whether you're planning that upcoming visit or just want to learn more about Italy, connect with me on TravelItalyExpert.com. Ciao for now. We'll see you online at Tease Italy, TravelItalyExpert.com.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at avemariaradio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to avemariaradio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchuk.
When their teens are struggling with depression, parents often wonder whether medication or therapy is the best way to help their kids heal. A new study published in the medical journal The Lancet sheds some light on this question. In a randomized, placebo-controlled, double-blind study, the so-called gold standard in medical research, doctors found that psychotherapy alone helped depressed teens and young adults just as much as those receiving counseling and medication combined. The authors of the study suggest that psychotherapy, especially cognitive behavior therapy, which addresses unhealthy thinking patterns, should be the first line of treatment for teens and young adults, with antidepressants being used only as a support to therapy when necessary. The good news is that teen depression responds tremendously well to treatment, but it's important to make sure that your kids get the right kind of help. I'm Dr. Greg Popchuk, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. In the Gospel of Luke, 10th chapter, Jesus commands the apostles to, quote, heal the sick and say to them, the kingdom of God has come near to you. Notice the sequencing. They're supposed to heal the sick even before they proclaim the kingdom, before they preach the gospel. This is what is sometimes been called the healing imperative of the church. And my guest, Mike Aquilina, takes a look at how this healing imperative really was the watershed leading to modern medicine. Mike Aquilina is the author of more than 50 books now, including the best-selling The Fathers of the Church, An Introduction to the First Christian Teachers. And Mike, good to have you back here.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Al.
Yeah. It was good running into you there in Steubenville, too. I wish we had had more time.
I loved your talk.
Oh,
it was
thanks.
Wonderful. I was the guy applauding very loudly.
You and Sally. Yeah. Thanks, Mike. Well, listen, you actually gave this talk, too, in one of the workshops, right, on this healing in the church.
Yes. Yes,
yeah.
I did. It's the subject of my one of my most recent books, The Healing Imperative, The Early Church, and The Invention of Medicine as We Know It.
You know, I haven't seen that book yet.
Well, you need to get a copy. I'll make sure my publisher sends
it. Yeah. No, actually, usually I see, you know, when they come around. But that's good. I didn't know you had a whole book on it. That's fantastic.
It's quite a story.
Yeah. Let's start, though, with another story, and that is Tony Galletta.
Yes. Yes, Tony was my GP, my primary care physician for most of my adult life, and he was a devout man. And when he was still a medical student, he started helping out this nun who worked in mountainous regions in the Philippines, and he realized she was just overwhelmed with the amount of care that was needed for the people up there, and they were impoverished. So there was no money to bring doctors up there. Well, Tony started going out there as much as he could, and then he talked his fellow medical students into giving their free time to help out. Now, you know how much free time medical students have, right?
Right, right.
Tony just had such a winsome personality. Tony was a man so full of life, and whatever he did with such gusto that you wanted to be part of it. I only knew him much later in life, and he was like this. But he really talked his medical student classmates into doing it, and pretty soon it became an established program, and it remained so. I believe it's still going now, something like 60 years later.
Wow.
In the Philippines, and he was honored as its founder some years back. But yeah, Tony made such an impression on me, and when I started reading more deeply in The Fathers of the Church, I recognized him in so many of the Christians I read about
yes.
in the Church Fathers, because they were doing medical care. They were establishing hospitals. They wanted to heal the sick after the model of Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And this, it's important to point out, this is not a kind of a triumphalistic, eccentric, or idiosyncratic view of history. This is standard teaching in medical schools.
It is. If you read any of the histories of the standard histories, the secular histories of the hospital, how the hospital developed, how it was founded, they all tell the same story, that it was Christianity that established the hospital. Before the rise of Christianity, there was no such institution, and there was no similar institution. Let me read you just a little bit here, Al,
sure.
from the work of Gary Ferngren, who mm-hmm. is a historian of medicine. And Gary Ferngren's book was published by Johns Hopkins University Press. He says, the hospital was, in origin and conception, a distinctively Christian institution rooted in Christian concepts of charity and philanthropy. There were no pre-Christian institutions in the ancient world that served the purpose that Christian hospitals were created to serve. None of the provisions for healthcare in classical times resembled hospitals as they developed in the Christian era.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something that's new with Christianity. It's part of the good news, and it just arrives fully formed, it seems, with Christianity, while Christianity is still illegal in the Roman Empire.
Huh. So there were no pre-Christian institutions that could be recognized as hospitals, but certainly there were healers, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, medicine was riotous. You know, there were soothsayers who claimed to be healers. There were herbalists. There were Hippocratic doctors. There was a group called empiricist doctors. And so there were many different schools, but there was no stability.
Yeah.
They were wandering healers, and they went from town to town, and they were usually outrunning their latest failure. There could be no stability. And it was not until much later, when Christianity was legal and had established hospitals, that you could have standards of training and standards of practice, and you could actually have many physicians working in a collegial way and observing patients together. Christianity also made medical research possible by giving the hospital its stability.
Mm. The ancient world did have this institution where they could basically repair slaves or soldiers, like horse farms or something.
Yes, that's exactly right. Because slaves and soldiers were valuable investments.
Yeah.
So if your slave got injured, boy, you wanted to get him repaired pretty quickly. So there were institutions to repair your slave. But there were not institutions to give medical care to the poor.
Yeah.
That came only with the rise of Christianity.
That's amazing. We take that, we really do, and really the secular world takes that for granted now. I mean, that's
like so much else.
Yeah, yeah. It's just assumed that humans have always done this, and there isn't that historical sense that when post-incarnation, the world is different.
It really is, and that became apparent to non-Christians, I'd say, in the middle of the 3rd century. Maybe it was already apparent by then, but it became very, very much so then, because a great plague struck the empire. It was smallpox.
Oh, okay.
And today we call it the Plague of Cyprian. That's how it's remembered, because the bishop, Cyprian, St. Cyprian of Carthage, did the most to record what was happening at that time. It's recorded very well in his letters. But what happened at that time is that, you know, the pagans in general, they abandoned town, and the doctors were the first to leave because the doctors knew that there was nothing they could do to stop a microbe. They didn't even know the microbe existed.
Right.
They just knew the symptoms, and they knew what the symptoms added up to, and they knew it was contagious. So they took their family and they left town, and you can't blame them for it. But the Christians stayed, and an outsized number of physicians were Christians. And so the Christians gave medical care. Now, the interesting thing is that this came during a time of most intense persecution. The worldwide persecution, empire-wide persecution of the Emperor Decius.
Okay.
And he really wanted to eliminate Christianity. And so Christians were outlaws at this time. And yet, the Christians stayed, openly gave medical care not only to the Christians, but to the pagans as well. So the Christian doctors were treating the persecutors who wanted to kill them.
Wow.
And you have to just let your imagination, you know, stew on this, you know, and think, what was the effect on those people? If they survived the plague, yeah. And they were much more likely to survive if they got good medical care and a bowl of soup every day.
Yeah.
Well, if they survived the plague, what did they want when they recovered? They wanted whatever those doctors had. Because those doctors had something they were willing to die for. And the Christians didn't the pagans didn't have anything to live for. You know, so this was immensely attractive in that world.
The Cappadocian fathers were especially effective here. Basil the Great, tell me a little bit about what he did.
Well, you know, this comes after the legalization of Christianity. So he had freedom. He had means at his disposal. He was an excellent fundraiser. He was very good at it. And he built a complex that was so vast that the locals called it the New City. And it included an orphanage, it included an almshouse, it included a hospice, it included a hostel for travelers who had no place to stay. He even had a vocational school there so that beggars could learn a trade. But the centerpiece of it was the hospital that was there, and it was staffed by his ascetics, and it gave care to all comers, no matter what their religion was. So it provided a model for the hospitals that followed. You know, at last Christianity is out in the open. At last it can do this sort of thing, and it does. Many followed the model. You know, today we often hear that faith is at war. There's a war, you know, waging a war on science. And sometimes we hear that the Catholic faith is waging a war on women. Well, the rise of the hospital really shows that both of those are lies, because it was Christianity that made the hospital possible, made medical research possible, and much of the work, surprisingly, was done by women who did not have status in the pagan world, but in the Christian world, they could come along and establish these institutions. So we have these great figures like Olympias in Constantinople and Fabiola in Rome, and they are the founders of the first hospitals. It's not only Basil the Great, it's not only, you know, the men who are doing this, but it's women too.
Yeah, this is remarkable. And how the impact on the surrounding culture, again, as you pointed out, had to be great. And I would think then that this was this healing imperative really clears the way for the proclamation of the gospel. And I would guess that is one of the reasons the church continued to grow, not just because it had been legalized and made the religion of the realm. I would think people were seeing they were tasting the powers of the age to come.
Absolutely. You know, and it continued to be true all through history.
Yeah.
I live in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Pittsburgh could not sustain a hospital for the longest time. People would try to start a hospital, and the first time an epidemic hit town, like cholera, well, everybody quit. And the hospital would have to close its doors. It was not until the Sisters of Mercy came from Ireland that a hospital was founded, and it was established, and it kept its doors open. Why? Because the Sisters of Mercy gave their entire lives to their task. They were willing to die if need be in order to serve Jesus Christ and the sick. So that pattern that was established in the time of the fathers continued until recently, very recently. And Al, I have to wonder whether the hospital can survive long without a foundation of Christian charity.
I wondered this myself. In a way, we're kind of living off the capital of the past right now.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll come back and talk a little bit about that, Mike. Mike Aquilino, my guest, The Healing Imperative, the Early Church and the Invention of Medicine. I'm Al Cresto.
Ann Arbor Smiles welcomes Dr. Patrick DiDonato and Dr. Abigail Walker to their team. Patrick is a parishioner of St. Thomas the Apostle in Ann Arbor, and Abigail is a pediatric dentist with openings available without a wait. Learn more about them at annarborsmiles.com. The team at Ann Arbor Smiles offers nearly every specialty in two convenient locations, including cosmetic dentistry, braces and Invisalign, and even sleep apnea. Ann Arbor Smiles provides care for the entire family. Visit AnnArborSmiles.com.
In hundreds of counties in Appalachia in the South, there is no Catholic presence. There are no priests, brothers, sisters, or lay ministers. The less than 1% of the population that is Catholic often struggles to participate in the life of the church. Glen Mary Home Missioners is the only Catholic community exclusively committed to serving this part of the United States. To learn more about joining Glen Mary Home Missioners in this mission, visit glenmary.org. That's glenmary.org.
Crescent in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization, Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 80% of the referral check to Ave Maria Radio and Students for Life. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Join approximately 1,000 women from the Diocese of Lansing and from across the state of Michigan to be inspired and renewed in our faith at the Catholic Women's Conference at the Lansing Center. Enjoy praise and worship music, listen to motivating speakers, celebrate Holy Mass with Bishop Oye, and experience the fellowship of sisterhood in Christ Jesus. The event is Saturday, October 12th. To see the tremendous speakers list, go to LansingDioceseCWC.org. That's LansingDioceseCWC.org.
This program is brought to you in part by the Acton Institute. It's hard to escape the barrage of negativity these days. Between fake news and the drumbeat of tribal politics, where can you go for smart conversation? Acton Mind is the official podcast of the Acton Institute. Every Wednesday, we explore what really leads to human flourishing and a free and virtuous society. Acton Line is a mix of faith and economics, history and philosophy, with a little culture thrown in. On iTunes, the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you find your podcasts.
Beth, why is our health insurance so expensive? Our premium and deductible are so high. Plus, I don't want my family to support a company that doesn't share our values.
Kim, there is another option. Check out CMS Curo. It's an affordable Catholic healthcare ministry where members share their medical costs in community, and it's pro-life. We joined last year and have saved thousands, all without compromising our values. Just go to MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
CMF Curo sounds exactly like what our family needs.
Yeah, that's MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
20 years ago, we were all preparing for Y2K, and it's been 20 years since we opened Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Hi, I'm Dan Hall. My family and team of the very best professionals are very proud and grateful to be serving you for 20 years. To celebrate with you, we're offering substantial discounts on all new Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram vehicles, as well as 10 acres loaded with certified pre-owned vehicles. The deals are hot, so come in during our Jeep Adventure Days and Ram Power Days going on now, or visit us online at PinckneyChrysler.com.
Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria Mutual Funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
And a good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta, thanking you for joining me. I'm talking with Mike Aquilina. He's the author of The Healing Imperative of the Early Church and the Invention of Medicine. We are looking at this remarkable phenomenon. It's a historical phenomenon, but you can see, under the Lordship of Christ, we've seen the development of what we call the hospital. It seems so common to us, and we take it for granted. Probably most of us were born in hospitals. But there was a time before the coming of Jesus that there were no hospitals. The best they had were repair shops for slaves and soldiers, because that was property. And so we've been talking about the remarkable phenomenon that we call the hospital. And we said at the close of the last segment, Mike, you made the point that when a culture ceases to be motivated by this divine healing imperative, How long can they keep alive the practice of hospitals? And how long can they motivate a... What's going to will we lose the idea of medicine as a vocation? Will we have trouble getting nurses, for instance?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. You bring up a good point, because who would want to do it? Who would want the work? Who would want the trouble?
Yeah.
I make the point in my book that so many pagan cultures were so very well developed. You know, the Egyptians and the Chaldeans and the Greeks especially, and then the Romans. They had all of the components necessary for the creation of a hospital. They had all the elements in place. They knew medicine. They had doctors. They had all of these things in place, but they lacked that synthesizing principle, which is charity. Right? That's one thing that they lacked.
Absolutely.
The other thing they lacked was the idea of hospitality, because this is something that's emphasized throughout the New Testament, and especially by the apostles, by Paul in his letters and Peter in his letters, that we're supposed to practice hospitality. And, of course, in the letter to the Hebrews, it's emphasized. So we're supposed to practice hospitality, welcoming everyone. And this is the idea that inspires and also gives a name to the institution, the hospital. The hospital arises out of Christian charity and Christian hospitality. And that's the only thing that sustained it for these 20 centuries. We have to ask whether, you know, it will sustain itself,
yeah,
you know, apart from Christian faith, or whether it can.
Yeah, yeah. Overwhelming, in the early church, I think you pointed this out. If you look at the various occupations, or what we might call professions, doctors are beat out other fields.
That's right. It's an amazing thing. Archaeologists and historians work together to catalog all the names of people we know from antiquity, and then they make databases, huge databases of what we know about each of them. Well, there are more doctors than any other cohort in the ancient church. That more than bankers, more than plumbers, more than lawyers, more than any line of work, doctors tend to predominate. And there may be two reasons for that. One, doctors may have been attracted to the Christian faith because they saw in Christ an embodiment of their ideals, their goals, their desires. But also, Christians may have been drawn to the medical profession because it was a way they could obviously imitate Jesus every day of their lives throughout all their work. And I think everyone in the medical profession, nurses, physicians assistants, EMTs, can all draw inspiration from those early Christians, because all of those professions were represented in the first hospitals in one way or another.
You mentioned earlier, I mean, this is long before what we call the scientific enterprise,
mm-hmm.
late Middle Ages, early modern era. But so what, given that medicine was a very different practice in those first centuries of the Christian era, what was it like? What did they do? I mean, was prayer an important part of this rest? What were their treatments?
Well, I'll bet prayer was an important part of it for Christians. As I mentioned before, it was a riot of methods and a riot of schools apart from Christianity. What's interesting is that, as far as we know, Christians seem to have gravitated to two schools of medicine, the Hippocratic school and the empirical school. Those two schools, which really are the schools that have endured in one way or another into what we know as medicine today. Now, why those two schools? My own sense is that they were the two schools that trafficked the least in superstition and in sacrifice to the gods and in oaths sworn to the gods. So the Christians could practice in these fields and still enjoy the freedom to observe their Christian faith faithfully.
When these hospitals were established, Again, obviously, the relationship to hospitality. Mm-hmm. Hospitality we think of as being practiced in a family setting, and we think of hospitals today as a kind of a professional institution. Was the hospital of the ancient world a more familial enterprise?
Well, it was, and because many of these ancient hospitals were staffed by ascetics, by celibates who were completely dedicated to the task of caring for sick people. They arose out of the monasteries, they arose out of the parish churches, and it was a family setting because it was within the church, and the church is a family.
The family of God, very good. I want to come back to this question of what happens when a culture turns its back. We've never seen this before, really. A post-Christian world is very different than a pre-Christian world. In the pre-Christian world, you can kind of think of it as, Holy Spirit is kind of wooing the world, and the world is saying, this is something new, and there's a kind of a romance to it.
Mm-hmm.
In a post-Christian world, it's more of a divorce. And the divorced partner here, or the one who's issuing the divorce, thinks they know the church only too well, and they feel that things haven't worked out the way it should. And so, in a way, it's going to be, I think, more difficult for us in a post-Christian era to do the work of proclamation. But I'm curious what you think. Is it going to be more difficult because people will be more cynical, or will we be able to stir up memories of what has been? Will people realize they do have a debt to Jesus in the Catholic Church?
Well, I'm optimistic in the long term. In the short term, I think it's going to get hard. And it's going to get hard especially for people who are in the medical profession. These conditions today affect a lot of the members of my family, where you're constantly being asked to compromise your standards, constantly being asked to do things that are against your conscience.
Yeah.
And it's going to be that way for a while.
Yeah.
But I believe in the creative power of Christianity for creating new institutions, making a new way all the time. It seems to me that in every period, Christianity has been persecuted, has been kind of limited in many ways, and Christians have always looked at those limitations and found creative ways to address them and come up with institutions that are better than they had previously. And I think that's what's going to happen now. I think that medical care is going to decline, and people are going to become dissatisfied to the point of rage against the medical profession. We see a lot of this already. People are frustrated. They're treated shabbily. They're treated like livestock as they go to their doctors. They go to the hospitals today. We're going to see a decline in care, and Christians are going to say, we can't do that. And they're going to come up with alternatives. I believe this is coming. I don't know how soon. I don't know if I'll live to see it.
Right.
But I do believe that the future of medicine and the future of the hospital will be Christian.
Yeah. Well, those are words of hope, and I take them to heart. Mike, thanks so much for being with me. The name of the book again?
The name of the book is The Healing Imperative, The Early Church, and the Invention of Medicine as We Know It.
Very good. We'll talk again. Thanks.
Hey, thanks so much, Al. Thanks for having me.
Mike Aquilina, again, it's called The Healing Imperative, The Early Church, and the Invention of Medicine. I want to tell a little story here. In the early 4th century, famine and disease struck the army of the Roman Emperor Constantine, and Pacomius was a pagan soldier in that army. And he was watching in amazement as many of his fellow Romans were bringing food to the afflicted. And they were doing it without discrimination. In other words, if you are hurt and you are human, we're going to help you. And he was wondering, this Pacomius was wondering, where did this come from? What inspired these kind of acts of generosity and what we would call humanity? And he began to learn about the Christian faith. And before he knew it, he was on the road to conversion. Now, this kind of amazement has always attached itself to Catholic charitable work through the ages. Even Voltaire. I mean, he was the most prolific anti-church activist of the 18th century, was awed by the spirit of self-sacrifice that he saw in many of the church's sons and daughters. In fact, listen to this quote. "Perhaps there is nothing greater on earth than the sacrifice of youth and beauty, often of high birth, made by the gentle sex in order to work in hospitals for the relief of human misery, the sight of which is so revolting to our delicacy. People separated from the Roman Catholic religion have imitated, but imperfectly, so generous a charity." In fact, he went on to say the Catholic Church invented charity as we know it in the West. The world is different because of the coming of the Son of God. And the imitation of Christ, the spiritual discipline, you might say, of the imitation of Christ, or this call for divinization or reproducing the divine life within us, conformity to Jesus, that is a different project, you might say, than existed before the coming of Christ. The Stoics, the Roman moralists, I mean, they taught morality and, in some sense, virtue. But Christianity changed the vision of what human beings could become. Jesus, the Son of God, in coming into the world, gave us much clearer focus of the kind of person God had created us to be. And that's another reason the world has a debt to the Catholic Church.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999. Fire on the Earth's Peter Herbeck.
Jesus said, if you're going to follow me, the world's going to hate you because it hated me first. Friends, you know, we're living at a time when the world is getting more and more offended by God, by the teaching of Jesus, by Jesus' understanding of reality, by the church's teaching about all kinds of things. About what's a man, what's a woman, what's a family, when does life begin, who has the power to take life, who doesn't, all this stuff. Society is celebrating things that Jesus condemns, and society is getting angry at the church. Who do you think you are? You intolerant, hateful people. And look what else is happening. As it gets hotter, as the heat gets turned up, quite a few Catholics are drifting with the culture because they don't want to take the heat. And we're losing an amazing opportunity to stand with Jesus right now. It's really foolish. It's so unwise. And if we don't see it, we're going to miss the most important things Jesus wants us to do. And we're going to have to appear before the judgment seat of God on it. That's important. Trust in the Lord. Don't be afraid. If men reject you because what you believe they deem is hateful, blessed are you. Peter says, rejoice. Don't run from it. Rejoice in it.
Peter Herbeck spreads fire on the earth weekday mornings at 6:30 and again at 11:45 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
Well, thank you so much. Good being with you. And as I go off the air, open forum with Jimmy Akin and Tim Staples. What a great 1-2 punch. Coming up next on Catholic Answers Live. Tonight on EWTN Radio and Television, it's the World Over Live with Raymond Arroyo. And tomorrow, on Crest in the Afternoon, J.D. Flynn is going to be joining us. The Vatican has joined the debate in the Indianapolis Jesuit high school case. Remember, the Archdiocese of Indianapolis refused to renew the contracts of two teachers who, over time, had ended up getting involved in same-sex marriage. This, of course, in direct violation of the Catholic Church. They are now suing. And the Vatican has stepped in to put the suspension of these teachers on hold. We'll tell you why. Also, Alejandro Bermudez will be bringing us the latest from Venezuela, where, again, we seem to be spinning our wheels. The Maduro regime is being held up, propped up by the military, and the Venezuelan people are undergoing extraordinary suffering medically, when it comes to food and water, when it comes to freedom of speech. We'll talk about that with Alejandro tomorrow. Let me remind you that whatever we discuss on this program can be followed up by going to AveMariaRadio.net. That, again, is AveMariaRadio.net. So the conversations we've had with Ulf Ekman today and with Wes Smith and with Mike Aquilina, we'll have follow-up information in the Cresta guest archives, and the books that we mention are always available in our online bookstore. So, thanks for being with me. Keep us in your prayers, and we look forward to being back with you tomorrow for another edition of Cresta in the Afternoon. Stay tuned now for Tim and Jimmy on Catholic Answers Live.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.